Welcome to Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. I'm Stella Fong. In this show, my husband Joe Dillard and I go to the Gallatin River Lodge, where we are guests for a night at the Boutique Bozeman Luxury Hotel. The lodge, built originally by Steve Gamble on 20 acres as a fly fishing retreat, is now open to all. First, we go on a tour of the property with General Manager P.J. Werchanski, and then we talk to Executive Chef Scott Myers and Pastry Chef Nicholas Ballou. Best of all, you join us for dinner. We are getting ready to walk into the Gallatin River Lodge, and here is General Manager P.J. Werchanski welcoming us.
Hi there. Thank you so much for coming out to the lodge today. It's a beautiful day. Everything's green. Birds are out. Rivers are just about perfect.
Well, the Gallatin River Lodge is actually a very special place because I feel like we're in the middle of nowhere. However, we're very close to Bozeman, Montana.
We are. We're only about 15 minutes away from downtown Bozeman, yet we're out in the country. We've got views of seven mountain ranges from the lodge. And so you feel like you're in the country, yet you can get to the airport in 15 minutes one direction and downtown Bozeman 15 minutes in the other.
Well, now the Gallatin River Lodge is touted as the Boutique Bozeman Luxury Hotel. It began as a fishing lodge, didn't it?
It did. You know, Steve has been an outfitter for about 35 years, and he's been guiding people on area rivers and out in the mountains for quite some time. And, you know, he really wanted to start it out as a fishing lodge, but we've evolved as Bozeman continues to grow. A lot of people are looking for a higher-end, authentic Montana experience. And so whether folks are on their way to Yellowstone or if they're going to spend a week with us fishing every day, it's a great place to call home for while you're away from your own home.
Share with listeners some of the highlights about the lodge.
Well, I think, you know, the location is the first and foremost that people comment on. You know, you're close to town, yet you feel like you're in the country. You feel like you're in Montana with the views, these big sky views. And then yet you've got this wonderful luxury experience. There's only 12 rooms here, so you get to know one another. We all get the fortunate experience of getting to know our guests. We also have very talented chefs who have years and years of culinary experience. We've got a garden on site that we started a couple of years ago, and so we really are fortunate to be able to source a lot of local ingredients into our culinary program. And then we have a lot of crew that have been here for quite some time. So I have the fortunate role of leading a team of about 25 professionals here from the food and beverage side through the lodge and everything in between.
We now step inside the lodge and begin our tour.
Main Lodge was built in 1999. It's a traditional, authentic Montana lodge. Everything's a lot of wood, open spaces. We've got our main dining room here where we serve breakfast and dinner for all of our guests. We've got a nice historic bar that we were able to get from a hotel here in Big Timber, Montana. And so we serve dinner nightly between 5 and 9 p.m. during our summer season. And we've got our main dining room. We also have our patio dining room here, which has doors that open to the outside. And so it gives you that feeling of sitting outside while you're eating dinner, looking out over the pond, listening to the birds, watching the whitetail come through in the evenings, and a nice fine dining experience, talented chefs, professional servers. Make sure that everybody gets the full experience while they're here.
And it's a restaurant that outside guests can also come and join if they make a reservation.
Absolutely. About 80% of our business is guests that come in from outside the lodge, and then the balance will be guests that are staying with us while they're here.
So now we walk into the main room.
So this is our great room. We've got a nice big fireplace in here, a nice open room where guests can come and relax. In the wintertime, we have a nice fire going every night. Guests can come in and tell stories of the day, whether they were out hiking or fishing, horseback riding in Yellowstone. And it's a nice place for everybody to come in and congregate before dinner.
It's nice and cozy here. So let's go upstairs. No. So now we've gone up the stairs and turned the corner. Where are we now?
So this is the library. This is one of the rooms that all of the guests have access to. Has a nice porch that looks out over the Bridger Mountains. Nice breeze coming through right now. Guests will sit here in the mornings and also in the evenings. You can watch the sunset. And so it's upstairs in the main lodge where we've got four guest rooms upstairs and then two of the suites are downstairs.
We now move from upstairs to where PJ and I are now standing outside in front of the lodge. So my understanding is all is welcome to this lodge. You even have accommodations for dogs.
We do. We have several pet-friendly rooms. Folks that are traveling through, they have their dogs with them. They are more than welcome to bring them. We provide a blanket, a towel, puppy bags, and some homemade organic puppy treats for them to enjoy.
They're being treated just like royalty.
They are. Well, a lot of them are part of the family. So they've got 20 acres to run around. They've got a pond to look at the birds and make sure that they feel like they can stretch their legs after traveling.
To the left of the front entrance, there is another branch of the lodge.
Right. So this is our Trout Lodge, which was built just a few years ago. And it's a nice, modern, contemporary building. A lot of the folks that are staying with us enjoy the Trout Lodge because it's steps away from the pond if they want to do some fishing. All the rooms have a nice little patio set where they can sit outside and enjoy being here in Montana. And so there's 6 rooms over in this building as well. And so altogether, we have 12 rooms for guests to stay. Yeah, it's kind of neat. So we've got, we have a few different areas for guests to sit by the pond. We've got some Adirondack chairs on our new pavilion where guests can sit and have a beverage in the evenings. And then we also have our games where they can do horseshoes or cornhole.
With the welcome of all visitors, the fly fishing core of the lodges is still strong. This is a place where fly fishermen and fisherwomen of all levels can be accommodated.
We have some guides that have been with us over 15 years, several of them actually, and really we keep them busy just about every day from May through October, and they'll fish the Gallatin, the Madison, the Yellowstone, the Jefferson, the Missouri, and then we have a lot of private waters that we can lead on, and then we've got private access on the Gallatin as well.
And you can accommodate people of all levels.
We can, whether someone fishes every year at a different place and this is just on their bucket list, or someone who's never picked up a fly rod and reel, we can take them out and make sure they get out on the water and have a great experience.
You also have a pond on site.
We do. For those who want to try their hand at casting or just get a little warm up before they head out on the river, we've got a nice pond that's stocked with trout right in front of the lodge. And so people can head out there really at their convenience and enjoy the pond itself.
Is it catch and release?
It is catch and release, yes. It's all part of the experience.
Now that we have toured the lodge, let's talk to the man behind the food. We are sitting here at the patio with Executive Chef Scott Myers. Thank you for taking time to talk with me.
You're welcome, Stella. It's nice to have you.
It is a gorgeous day right here, and it's just fun to be outside. Chef, you've had over 20 years of experience in the culinary industry. Can you share with the listeners where you have trained and cooked?
Well, I started when I was 13. I was washing dishes and baking little rolls, I guess. I had done that through high school, kind of as a part-time job, and then I started to cook on the line when I was about 16. And then I went to school for radiology, still cooking. And then I got bored with that. And then I enrolled at New England Culinary Institute in Vermont. And that's where I got my culinary degree, graduated in the class of 96, and then basically was traveling around ever since.
Well, and you've worked for some amazing bed and breakfasts and luxury lodges.
Yes, I have.
And can you share with the listeners what some of them are?
My very first one was the Inn at Wethersfield in Perkinsville, Vermont. That was an old stagecoach hotel back in the 1800s, and I opened it with 2 people from Manhattan. It was kind of a dream of theirs to have a bed and breakfast. We did 3 years together. I opened that with them, and then they went on to basically just have a really, really excellent fine dining, farm-to-table luxury bed and breakfast. And then most recently, I was with Relais & Chateau with the Hotel Faucher in Milford, Pennsylvania. We ran casual downstairs in the bar and grill, and then I had the Delmonico room, which was our fine dining where I was at. I ran the whole entire kitchen department, but that was what I did for the most part, was hand select everything, farm to table, foraged whatever, and then created a weekly menu that we ran for 3 nights. The other 3 days was just basically sourcing, picking, prepping, all of that stuff.
So did you have a garden at that point, or did you just go out into the wilderness to pick your items for your plate?
Both, actually. We had one of the owners who had recently passed had a farm that was dedicated to the restaurant, so they had their own kind of personal thing. And then I had quite a few people around town that would pick things. I foraged. We had just a tremendous amount of wild edibles, and then the plethora of farms in Jersey, Pennsylvania, and New York, because we were kind of like right in the corner there. So we could pick from all three states, which was kind of nice.
So give me some examples.
Let's see. I had one guy that would bring me mushrooms, different kinds, pretty much every couple of days. I had another guy that would pick snails for me. I had another guy that would bring me fresh trout. A number of people that were doing like fresh Asian vegetables. I had regular fruits, heirloom vegetables. We were able to get raw milk there all the time, you know, in the store. So I had a couple of people that would bring me raw milk, goat and cow, and that we would make ice creams with and bases for our different items that we had.
You grew up on the East Coast and you speak of Vermont, and you're from a small town called South Hero, Vermont. How did that influence your cooking and love of food?
Well, it's a farm community, and it was basically a big area in the middle of Lake Champlain that had mostly dairy and apples. So obviously it was small. I think we had, when I grew up there was only like 500 people. And the island's not very big anyway. It's only about 30 miles long, I think. But I had met a good friend of mine. His name is Dan Rainville, and he was one of the first chefs that I worked for when I was a kid. And he basically just kind of showed me how important where you were getting your products from, using the best that you could get. And I got to butcher rabbits to halibut to salmon to hog legs to you name it. I mean, we were doing that way back when, and it was just a lot of fun. And that's basically how I just kind of enjoyed doing what I was doing.
Well, and a fabulous education at best.
Absolutely. Yeah, being so young with that, it was great.
You've also traveled the world.
Mostly the U.S., yes. Pretty much all over.
And so you've sampled many cuisines from all over the United States?
Yes.
And I noticed that where you grew up was right under Montreal, which is a very international city. Did you frequent that city?
I did. Once I was able to go over there legally, I went over there all the time.
And do you have highlights?
I had a lot of little places that I used to like to go to. Old Town Montreal that did classic French food, like very, very traditional stuff. You know, you could just go get really good crepes, really good beef bourguignon, really very simple stuff. And then the Asian culture was amazing. I used to love Chinatown there. That became probably my favorite spot. There was a little place below the city. It was all live tanks of fish, and they would just basically grab the fish, kill it, and wrap it for you, and send you on your way. And you had, I don't know, there was probably like 40 or 50 different kinds of fish and crustaceans that they had there. It was amazing. We have Lake Champlain, which is what I grew up on, so that's fresh water. And then Boston was about 5 hours away, so you could be right on the coast. Maine was very close, and then you could be in New York City within seven, eight hours tops.
Well, which makes it convenient. That's why you were able to have these lodges and be able to have customers come in like for weeks or on a weekend.
Absolutely. Yeah. Most of the people that we did pull from were either from Montreal or from either Manhattan, Boston, Portland, Maine. And then we did a lot from Philadelphia as well.
Please share with the listeners your philosophy behind the menu here at the lodge. How often does it change?
During season, we do once a month, maybe once every 3 weeks. I would say during season, we're looking at about 80% local, from meats to vegetables to dairy. Off season, in the wintertime, we're looking probably just to keep costs, you know, relatively decent when we're slower. I would say I change it like once every 2 months. And it's not really, there's not really a whole lot going on out here for difference of, there's a lot of local stuff, but it stays pretty much the same. But basically, all I try to do is a little bit more modern approach with a lot of Montana products, and just to keep it user-friendly in the way that you can kind of identify on the menu, but then when you actually see it and how it's plated and presented, it's completely different than what you would normally find in town or around the area here.
So as far as specifics, what, you know, some of the local items that you do serve?
Currently, we've got pork on the menu. We have beef. We have cream and yogurt,
you know,
I'll spell creamery. We have a bunch of different grains and rices from Timeless Seeds. We have vegetables, microgreens. We have a bunch of different people. Mainly I use Gallatin Botanical. I have another gentleman down the road at Catamount Farms. His name is Douglas Stream. He does a lot of my smaller vegetables. We have Trout Culture over in Livingston, which does our fish, or not all of it, but just part of it, and some microgreens over there. Salad mix, heirloom vegetables and tomatoes. We have a lady over in on Spring Hill Road at Terra Works that does, she's doing melons right now, all aquaculture grown.
So I see that you have a garden out there, and your garden manager is Brianna Dukedeck. How do you work with her to finally get what you need on the plates that you serve your guests?
Well, we basically just sat down in the springtime. This is relatively new, so we're kind of going through our growing pains with it. You know, some things work really well and some things don't. So we're kind of seeing, you know, where we're at with it. But basically what we did last year was we had our garden. We saw what we had, or that what we used a lot of, what we didn't use a lot of, what we had too much of, and what we didn't have enough of. And then we kind of compiled certain things that we had left over. We did a lot of seed saving this past year, so we're waiting to see if all of that takes. But we just barely got it planted up. I'd say probably she's been working on that the last couple of weeks now. The weather's been kind of hit and miss lately, so we're just kind of playing with Mother Nature at this point.
Well, right now it seems like spring is just emerging here. It's just green and lush, and there's still snow in the far mountains too, so you're just starting as far as the garden goes. What were some of the produce that you did grow here?
Last year she grew some really nice beets. We had three different kinds. We did a lot of little tiny radishes, lots of edible flowers. Most of our herbs, I would say probably mid-season came. We did a lot of Swiss chard, spinach, salad mix. I'd say little items like that, basically just to see where we were at with that.
So what are you thinking about highlighting this summer that you haven't done before?
You know, I have a couple of people that are growing some certain vegetables for me, mainly smaller petite stuff. So I'm kind of just seeing how that all kind of takes place. And then we meet a lot of other people as well through the course of the months. I have a lot of new people that come, you know, and tell me that they grow whatever, and if we'd be interested in that. I just had a family that was over. They had dinner here a few weeks back, and they were from Manhattan, and they do baby potatoes over there. They have a smaller place that they do that with. So we're going to be trying that out here shortly once they start picking. But basically, I just kind of want to meet more people. The more people we meet, the more products we can get and get our hands on.
Well, which is fantastic. So you pretty much create your menu. Do you follow recipes, or do you just see an item and you in your head create that dish?
I would say sometimes we do, you know, like on a lot of our more, like on our baked goods, we have obviously our recipes or whatever. We do have a few standardized things as far as vinaigrettes and stuff like that go. But for the most part, we just develop, you know, from what we have. You know, we'll find something that we really like that we can get for, you know, maybe a couple weeks, maybe a month, maybe a week. And then we'll just basically go for it and make something and try and have some fun with it.
So what brought you out west?
I'm a big bow hunter, and I love to eat wild game, and I love to hunt it. So that's one big thing. One of the things with the culinary part of it is I the products are all here. I really enjoy the people out here a lot. It reminds me of home. Vermont and Montana are very similar in a lot of ways, so it's kind of easy to fit in, I guess, if you will, and just to kind of get the things that you need. And one of the things I've always wanted to do was to kind of bring a better food culture out here and try and basically be on the forefront of that if at all possible. I know, you know, the clientele is here, the people are here, and it's just time for the food to kind of take some shape here and to move along, I guess, if you will.
Well, and you get the best of both worlds because you have travelers that come from afar. And they have palates that are more international. They've probably traveled to many different places. And yet what you also get to do is you get to educate the local culture and bring them up to speed as to what's available here in Bozeman in Montana.
Yeah, I think that's probably the best part about it is, you know, the people that come here, I guess they're expecting, you know, very basic meat and potato like things. And then, you know, there are some people in town that are actually starting to do more than your average, you know, what you would find out here. So yeah, it is nice because they expect one thing. And then when they have something completely different or something they're used to having in Manhattan or something that they're used to having in Los Angeles, and they're like, oh my God, this is totally amazing. But we're out here in the middle of nowhere. It's kind of cool. And as far as the local people go, I mean, it is great because I think a lot of them don't even know what they have here. You know, I mean, you're so used to having one thing, but like there's a guy down the road growing some really, really cool stuff that you just don't even think about.
Well, and I think you probably work in partnership with them. And if they present you with something interesting, you probably just say, hey, I'm going to go try that and actually cook in your kitchen and serve it to your guests.
Yeah, that happens a lot. I mean, the best, you know, obviously getting the great product is fantastic, but you know, the best thing about it is just meeting the people and seeing what they do. One of the things we did this winter time that I did with the staff was I took them on a lot of field trips. We went and saw, we have a couple more lined up too, to for some of the farms anyway, so we can actually see what they're growing or producing. But we went to one of the local slaughterhouses to see, you know, from point A to point B, how it comes, you know, what happens, all of that. And, you know, just meeting the farmers and the growers and establishing those relationships is, I would say it's probably even better than getting the product.
Just meeting those people and having you both passionate about what they're growing and then what you're going to do with what they're producing for you.
Absolutely. Yeah, it really, it makes a huge difference when you know where your stuff is coming from.
Yeah, it nearly makes you appreciate the product. And it's great for the producers because then they get to see what you are going to finally do with produce the product. Many lodges cannot accommodate outside dinner guests. Is this the case with the Gallatin River Lodge?
No, anybody can come and eat here. We do require that you make a reservation. We can take you off the road, but we're not going to guarantee a specific time or anything. We are pretty busy during the summertime. We are geared for fly fishing. So we have a lot of people here that are staying here that have fly fishing packages with that. Dinner is obviously included in that. And then we have the vacationer people that, you know, come and travel and all that. Yeah, anybody can call, make a reservation, stop on in. They are highly suggested that you do call ahead of time.
Is there anything else you would like to share with the listeners?
I just hope that more people, once they hear this, you know, decide that they want to come out and check it out. You know, if you're food driven or you're interested at all, or you're just looking for something a little bit different, you know, we'd love to have you come on out. Even if you want to poke your head in the kitchen and talk about food or whatever, I'm totally always up for that. But, you know, mainly we're just trying to get the word out that we're doing something a little bit different out here. We would just like to have people come and check it out. Let us know what you think.
My husband and I are here, and we're anxious to taste your creations.
That sounds good. We look forward to having you tonight.
Thank you so much for sitting down and talking to me.
Thank you very much.
Before we go to the second part of the show, I did speak with co-owner Cindy Gamble, who shared that she and her husband Steve found Chef Myers on a chef network after months of research. They were looking for someone with cutting-edge skills, creativity, and open-mindedness who could relay the feel of Montana in his food. Cindy described Myers as intense and a good leader, but Myers had one request. He did not want the title of chef. "Call me Frank," he said. Next, we have dinner and breakfast in my book, Created by a Chef. Now my husband Joe and I sit down to dinner. Our table is next to the sliding glass door that is now open. A light breeze blows through with sounds of birds from afar. We have a great view of the pond and the mountains beyond. To serve us tonight is Andy Galloway, who tells us about the specials.
The soup of the day is going to be local wild spring onions and potato veloute, so it's going to be a very creamy like bisque. And then as far as entree specials, I have pan-roasted Hawaiian walu, which is the same thing as escalar, so it's going to be a dense white fish, and then topped with a really fantastic rhubarb gastrique.
We talked to two guests, Susan and Martin Fisher, who live nearby.
We come to the Gallatin River Lodge for special occasions because it's so beautiful and so peaceful, and it's really close to our home, which is really lovely, and I think some of the best food in Bozeman.
What is in some of your favorite dishes?
You know, I think the menu is different this time than last time.
So I don't remember.
We come really for the view and the peacefulness.
And the food's always good.
And the food's always really excellent and nice wine list.
And you're celebrating a birthday tonight.
Yes, we are. It's Martin's birthday. We came last year for our anniversary as well.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
For our main entrees, my husband chooses the fish special, while I opt for the pan-roasted Moulard duck breast. But all good meals must begin with cocktails. Let's hear Andy's description of the two drinks we have ordered.
It's the Raimea River. It's bullet rye, and then it's topped off with a fresh squeezed lemon, a little bit of honey water, and the Domaine Catan ginger liqueur. So it's similar to a whiskey sour, but with a little more flavor and not nearly as much sugar or anything in there.
Did you create this drink?
Absolutely, that one I did create. So it is a gin and tonic with the White Lady Gin out of Missoula from the Montgomery Distillery. It is done with thyme from our garden. I also do a little thyme simple syrup that we make here in-house. So we squeeze that in first and then shake it with a fresh sprig of thyme as well as the gin, and then strain that into a glass of fresh ice with a nice garnish of thyme. So we change our cocktail menu every 2, maybe 3 months at the longest. We try to keep everything as Montana as possible. The safest cocktail that will be on the longest is going to be our herbal gin and tonic, because we'll actually be rotating out what the herbal options are all season long based on what we can get from our garden.
Our drinks were sharp and distinct and flavored, not muddled and bland. Perfect before our meal. Our entrees arrive at the table, artistry on the plate.
So it's a pan-seared moulard duck breast topped with pickled mustard seeds that we're doing here in-house, with some kamut grains, which is a wheat berry that's 99.7% gluten-free, in case you ever need to know that. It's finished off with a little blackcurrant gel and a rosemary thyme duck jus drizzled over it. As far as the walu fish goes, it's going to have grilled local spring garlic, some carrots, breakfast radishes, which are my favorite, those are those elongated radishes, and it's finished off with a little bit of rhubarb gastrique. So it's going to be kind of like a warm vinaigrette, but made with rhubarb. It is quite wonderful.
The duck was cooked to perfection, medium rare with skin crisp. Flavors played in my mouth from sour of the pickled mustard to sweet from the red currant, and then texture from the kamut. My husband's fish was cooked just right. We did try to observe every plate that was served around us. It was obvious there was tremendous attention to detail. Now to dessert.
It's the banana pan perdue. It's homemade banana bread that we turn into bread pudding. Pan fry that to order. It's served with a homemade maple bacon ice cream, a bacon caramel sauce, and a almond toffee crumble.
The dessert took an old-fashioned bread and modernized it. I admit, I don't favor bacon in my desserts, but this was good. Let's hear from pastry chef Nicholas Bellew how this sweet ending came to be.
To be honest, it was just kind of a weird, let's play with something different. I've never been a big fan of bacon myself in desserts, so it was just kind of trial and error for a little bit. Yeah, that was pretty much the end result. I think we did pretty well with it after playing with it for maybe a month.
Well, the crumble was delicious, because I find that a lot of times those crumbles almost break your teeth.
Yeah, no, I agree. Candy, I've always been pretty okay with. So I think things like toffee and things like that I've done a pretty solid job on. So I'm glad that worked out.
Well, and the maple ice cream.
Yeah, so the ice cream we get maple flown in from Vermont, where our chef is from. And then, yeah, we just decided to do a bacon maple ice cream. And that's how that kind of came about.
What was the secret behind your banana bread?
It's actually my girlfriend's family's recipe, so they'd be happy to know that I'm using that in dessert. So that's quite a bit old. That's maybe 100 years old, I want to say. It's definitely great grandma's recipe.
I think I'd keep that girlfriend around.
Oh, yeah, no, it's definitely the plan.
As we finished every single morsel of dessert, short of licking the plate, Andy returned one last time.
Anything else I can do for you right now?
No, we're good. Thank you. Okay. Thank you so much.
Before driving back to Billings this Sunday morning, we had breakfast in the dining room with the old Big Timber Bar as the backdrop. I had the elk and eggs with house-made elk and flathead cherry sausage, while my husband went with the wheat Montana oatmeal. Many thank yous to the Gallatin River Lodge, to P.J. Wachansky, Scott Myers, Cindy Gamble, Nicholas Bellew, and Andy Galloway. My husband Joe and I will be back to the Gallatin River Lodge when we need a nearby luxury getaway, an amazing meal, and the urge to fly fish. This is Flavors Under the Big Sky, celebrating the bounty of the region. Theme music is by Parker Brown. For more information about this show, go to ypradio.org. I'm Stella Fong.